We're holding on page six in Yevamos, about the middle of the page, middle of Os Ches. We were learning yesterday about the Shnius L'Arayis, the second level. You have the primary relatives, 20 or so of them, where the Torah says they're off limits to for marriage or to have relations. And then you have, in addition, another 20 or so, some of them going many generations up or down, where the Chachamim also ban them as a siogla. This is a classic example of Asu Siogla Torah, where they made a fence around the Torah and asked something that otherwise would have been mutter, in order to make sure that we don't end up doing something which is also Daraisa. So we were learning yesterday about where's a hint in the Torah for this concept. So Rava had brought a pasuk in connection with Arayas, and then Rav Yehuda and Rav Oshia had brought psukim from Kehelas and Mishlei, respectively, from which we see that Shlomo is the one, that Shlomo HaMelech is the one. He and his Beis Din made this takana of Shnius. Whenever, by the way, whenever we say that somebody made a takana, we don't mean him all by himself. He's not just sitting in his office and making takanas for the whole Jewish people. It means him together with his Beis Din. Anyway, so the last thing we said, that Rav Oshia had brought a pasuk, pra'ehu al tavar bo, where the Gemara is understanding pra'ehu as meaning enlarge it. So you have an area, a way of Rishoyim, as it talks about in the previous psukim, that you should enlarge it, meaning, in other words, make the area, the zone that's off limits, larger. Al tavar bo, so you don't come to go it, so you don't come to transgress it. Stay me olavavar, turn aside from it and pass by. Meaning, in other words, so the pasuk is implying when you have a way of rishoyim, for example, arayis, enlarge the area, the zone which is osur, so that you don't accidentally come to transgress and to trespass into the zone that's mutter. So Amar of Ashi, Moshel of Oshia, Lamaha Dava Domer, what can we compare if we say that that pasuk is indicating the concept of the Siogla Torah of Arayas? Then we can say that Rav Oshia, the pasuk that Rav Oshia is giving, suggests the following analogy. La'odim Meshamer Pardes, a person is guarding an orchard full of fruit trees. If he stands on the outside and watches it, then he's able to guard the whole thing. He's standing outside, so therefore all of it is in his field of vision, and he's able to see if anybody is sneaking in. But if he goes inside the garden and he's going to watch it there, shall the fun of mishtamer, then he's only going to be able to guard what's in front of him. He's not going to be able to see what's behind him. So people might be sneaking in from behind and taking things. The same way, in other words, the point is, Rav Ashi is saying that the point of the siyogim is don't be inside the garden like you're already among the isurim, and then you're going to try to guard yourself from them. But rather, because that would be like only being able to guard what's in front of you, rather stay outside of them, like over here, where we have Xeris Drabanan about the Shnius, and that way you'll be able to guard the whole thing. But the Gemara says, Vahodir of Ashi Bedusahi. This that of Ashi is saying is Bedusa, which literally Bedusa means a fiction. So there's a number of places where the Gemara has that expression about things that Amoraim say. Either it means, in other words, it's a way of saying it's completely untrue. There are Mefarshim who explain it means Rav Ashi never said this, somebody else thought this up and misattributed it to Rav Ashi. There were places in the Gemara also where instead of the word bedusa with a dalet, it has barusa with a resh, which comes from the word bar, which means outside. So then that's a nicer way of saying basically this, that it's not true, that it's not correct, but it's more along the lines of it belongs outside the Beis Medrash. It's not something that belongs in the Beis Medrash, where we should only be dealing with things that are completely true according to the logic of Torah. With that said, I mean, even we're calling this statement of Rav Ashi Bedusa, or in other places in Chas Barusa, it's still part of Torah after all. Rav Levi Yitzchak, the Rebbe's father, has an expression on it. He says, the same, it's all part of Chochmosi Ritzonish HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the same Eibishter who said that Torah has a certain truth to it and says, and has this point as part of it. That same one says that it's Bedusa, that it doesn't fit with other things that we know of Hashem's Torah, and therefore we can't say that we accept it. But nonetheless, it's still in a certain sense part of Torah. And the reason is, so what's wrong with what Rav Ashi is saying? Possum, because in the case of the garden, because the mushal is not quite like the nimshal. Possum, when it comes to the garden, the orchard, shall a fun of me a mishtamer. At least fine. You're saying a guy standing inside the orchard and trying to watch it, he's only going to be able to see what's in front of him. That implies at least some part of the orchard will be successfully guarded. The part behind him, not, but at least the part in front of him, yeah. But over here, we love Shnius. If it weren't for the concept of Shnius, poga be'er v'gufa, it's not a matter of that he might fail to keep some of the shnius. If you don't have the concept of shnius, he may wind up marrying an actual erva, which would be the equivalent, in other words, of the whole orchard would be available for thieves to take from, and he's not watching any of it. So therefore, so sort of Ashi's analogy doesn't really work for the nimshal of Arayas and shnius. Ian Yaakov points out, listen, I mean, so what was Rav Ashi's svara? You had to have some svara when he came up with this mashal. So he says, because within the Torah itself, you have certain things that are almost like the shnius, in that they're there in the Torah itself in order to guard you from closer relatives. Say, for example, you're not allowed to marry your daughter. It doesn't actually say that in Torah Shebichsav, but we learn it from Gzeira Shava, so it's considered a mitzvah daraisa. The Torah also says you're not allowed to marry your granddaughter. Now, even if a person were to go, suppose a person were to be over on the issue of marrying his granddaughter, sure, it's an erva min haTorah, but at least he hasn't married his actual daughter, which would be another kind of erva. So in that sense, you could say at least some of the arayas are guarded by, because in other words, the shnius in that case, so like three, so they have, for example, let's say the shnius are two levels away from a daughter. So he might, if he's over on shnius, if he doesn't have the concept of shnius, he might mistakenly marry his own granddaughter, which would be an issur daraisa, but at least he won't have married his own daughter, which is also an issur daraisa. So in that sense, in a certain sense, you could say that some of the orchard would be guarded. Nevertheless, the Gemara doesn't really like that, because still, I mean, you're not going to start picking and choosing among issurim daraisa and say this one is more severe and this one less so. Okay. Getting back to psukim, from which we learn a remez to shnius. So we had a few psukim so far. Rav Kahana omame hocha. Rav Kahana says you have another pasuk that indicates the necessity to make a shmira, to make a siyog la Torah when it comes to arayas. Because at the end of the section of arayas in Parshas Achrimos, it says ushmartim es mishmarti. You should guard my guarding. Which means asu mishmeras l'mishmarti. So it means that Hashem is saying, make a guarding for my guarding. I am trying to guard you from being involved with arayas, which would be an issur daraisa. You have to put on top of that a guarding to make sure that you don't even come close to them, namely by not marrying any of the shnius either. Omalei Abaye l'Rav Yosef. So Abaye asks Rav Yosef, hod daraisa. Well, in that case, if it says a shmartim es mishmarti, then that would make it an actual issur daraisa to marry these shnius. Why are we calling them only drabbanon? So okay, daraisa or pirsha rabbanon. It means that in a sense it's daraisa, but the chachamim explained it. So what? Kol haTorah nami pirsha rabbanon. Well, in that case, everything in the Torah is like that. Every mitzvah in Torah Shebichsav, Chazal explained to us the details of when that mitzvah applies and all the detailed dinim of it. So the Gemara says, no, you're right, it's not daraisa. Midrabbanon, the concept of shnius truly is drabbanon. Ukra asmachta ba'alma. What it is. The pasuk ushmartim es mishmarti is an asmachta. It's a support for it that the Chachamim found that we can use as a support, as like a hint for the fact of this gzeira drabbanan. But it's not really considered daraisa. That's not the actual drosha. That's not the actual limud that we learn from the pasuk. The Ritva points out, I think we've mentioned this before, that when we say that something is an asmachta, usually we just understand. In other words, it's a din derabbanan, and the Chachamim looked around and they found a pasuk that hints to it, that supports it. The Ritva says it's almost the other way around. When you find something where the Gemara says it's an asmachta, what it really means is Hashem, to begin with, when he gave the Torah to Moshe, was saying this would really be something good to do. But for whatever reason that I've decided, whatever part of Chochmasa, Ritzon Hashem HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I've decided not to make it part of the Torah that I'm giving. Nevertheless, I'm putting this pasuk in so that I expect the Chachamim to go and find such psukim and use them as a basis for making the din derabbanan, so it'll still be considered derabbanan, which has various implications in halacha. But the pasuk is there to give them a source to base themselves on, that they should realize this is something Hashem wants us to do. This is a gzeira, a takana that Hashem wants us to make, and to go ahead and do that. Further on in the perek, it talks about the dinim of when a woman is chayiv and yibum and when she's not. So the Mishnah says, Mishi yeshle ben mikomokim, a piska, Mishi yeshle ben mikomokim, a man who has any kind of son, meaning, for example, even if a son is a mamzer, poiter eshes ovim in a yibum, still it would mean that his father's wife, or all of his father's wives, are poter from yibum, because he has a son. Now the Gemara explains, actually, that would only apply if the son is Jewish. So if the father had a son with a goiter, with a shifcha, then that rule doesn't apply, because then that's not considered his son. But if he has a son, even from an erva, We're there for that. So let's say, for example, so we have Reuven was so Reuven is married to Sarah. Then he was mezana with Rivka, who was his sister or mother or what have you, and they had a child. That child is a mamzer. Nevertheless, Reuven has a child who is a Jew, and therefore Sarah and any other wives of Reuven will be potter from Yibum. And from Chalitza. And by the way, also the Mishnah mentions V'chayav Amakosa. By the way, that son is also considered his father's son insofar that if he hits his father and causes him to bleed, then he's going to be Chayav Mis. So the Gemara asks on that, Amai, why would he be Chayav for hitting his father? His father is a Rosha. Kori Khan, can't we apply the Pasuk over here, the Nasi Ba'amcha Loisar? The Pasuk says, don't curse a Nasi among your people. And the word Ba'amcha means Ba'oise Maisa Amcha, only when he's acting the way that a Yid, that a member of your nation should act. So therefore, we learn from that, that if a person is doing Isurim, then you're allowed to curse him. And the Gemara is assuming that the same thing would be also that the son could hit him, or maybe at least he shouldn't do it Lachatchila, but at least that he shouldn't be Chayav Misa for it. So why are we saying that he's chayev for his maka? If his father to mamzer, then it means he's a rosha. The answer is kid omer Pinchas mishmei de papa ba'oisa tshuva. Just like Rav Pinchas says in the name of Rav Papa that we can be talking about a case where he did tshuva. The context where Rav Pinchas said that is at the end of Chagiga. We learned not so long ago, the end of Chagiga in Ein Yaakov talks extensively about a lot of dinim of Tumah V'Tahara, and among other things, it discusses a point. We know that an Ama Oretz is considered by default to be Tomei, so you have a situation there where an Ama Oretz touched, where for example, somebody stole a Keli, and then later on he returned it, and we say, we can believe him to say that he didn't make it Tomei, so the question is how? How can we believe him on that? And Rav Pinchas explains, we're talking about when he did Tshuva, and he's not returning out of fear of the police or whatever, he's returning it because he's truly doing Tshuva, so then we can assume when he's saying that I didn't make it Tomei, then we can take him at his word, because he's trying to do proper Tshuva. The same thing you could say over here that the father did tshuva. Well, therefore, his son, the mamzer, is not allowed to hit him or curse him. The master, what do you mean? V'hai bar tshuva? Who? How is this person capable, the father, capable of doing tshuva? V'hatanya, don't we learn in a braisa? We learned in Chagiga. Shimon, there's actually a mission over there. Shimon ben Menasya Omer. Ezum uvas lo yuchal liskoin. What is an example of a crooked thing that can't be made straight? Zahabala erva v'hoilid men a mamzer. An example of that would be a man who has relations with an erva and any father's a mamzer. So that's lo yuchal liskoin. So that on the face of it, he can't do tshuva. The answer is he could. He can't. We talked about this yesterday in a different context of the Gemara. It's true in a certain sense, as long as the mamzer is alive, there's a permanent reminder of his avera. Nevertheless, he can do tshuva as much as he's capable of, and now we can call him oisa maisa amcha. He's doing what a yid should. It's true, there is something, there is a residue of it left over, as the Alter Rebbe phrases it, that yod of an islab shib guf bos of a dumb, but nonetheless, the fact is he's able to do tshuva as much as possible, and now his son would be chayev if he hit him or cursed him. So that would be the case where the Mishnah is talking about that he would be chayev for doing that. Tosfos actually points out, let's say the father had done something that makes him chayev nidui. So then, let's say, for example, he mentioned Shem Shemayim Levatola or something else. So even though he did tshuva, he still may have to be put in nidui. The son should not be the shliach to put his father in nidui, because after all, he's still not allowed to curse his father. So there you have an example. His father has done tshuva, but nevertheless, he's chayev nidui, and therefore his son shouldn't be the one doing it. Similarly, the Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin, by the same token, that if the father is chayev malchus, the son shouldn't be the one administering the malchus. Where again, if the father hasn't done tshuva at all, then maybe he would be able to, because then again, he's not also to hit his father, but we're saying if his father did tshuva, then the son should not be the one to administer the malchus. And similarly, Tosfos is saying he shouldn't be the one to administer the nidui.
The malchus is his tshuva.
The malchus is his kapara, the difference between tshuva and kapara. You have to keep in mind, when a person is chayev misa or misas beistin or malchus, he can do all the tshuva he wants. It still doesn't take away the punishment, because the beistin has no way of looking into his heart and knowing what he truly thinks. Hashem can forgive him, but the beistin still has to carry out the punishment. And yeah, the punishment is part of his kapara, yeah. Okay. Continues the Gemara. So now the next Mishnah mentions the point, mitzvah begodol liyabim, that the ideal mitzvah is that the eldest of the brother, the surviving brothers, should be the one to do yibum. If any of the other brothers does it, then it's fine, but it's supposed to be the eldest one. Now you have a pasuk that goes like this, which the Gemara is going to darshan, but first let's read the pasuk and understand it in its most surface sense. The pasuk says about yibum that she has to marry the brother-in-law, V'hoya habchor asher teled, and it will be the firstborn to whom she gives birth, Yokum Hashem Ochiv HaMeis, shall stand up in the name of his dead brother, V'lo Yimach HaShemoy Mi'Yisrael, so his name is not wiped out from among the Jewish people. So reading that pasuk on the surface, you would say, as the Gemara is going to point out, it sounds like it means, in other words, that you do Yibum, and then the first baby that woman has, you should be named after the dead brother, and that way perpetuate his name. But the Gemara is going to say that no, that's not what the pasuk means. So Tana Banan, v'hoya ha-bechor, when it says, and it shall be the bechor, doesn't refer to the bechor that she has later on after she gets married in Yibum. It means mekan shem mitzvah begodol yabim. From here we learn that the eldest of the brothers, the bechor among the brothers, has the mitzvah to do Yibum. In other words, we take the v'hoya ha-bechor as basically a continuation of the previous pasuk, where it says that the Yavama Yavai Aleha, that her Yavam should have relations with her and take her as a wife, and do Yibum, V'hoya HaBachor, who should it be? That should be the Bachor. Asher Teled, when it says that she bears, that she gives birth, that means Pratla Ailonis She'eni Yeledis. That comes to tell us that Yibum is not cannot be done with an Ailonis, who's not capable of giving birth. An Ailonis is a woman who has certain physical symptoms, the Gemara discusses them in detail later on in the Masechta, that her body never fully matures. It can mean a matter of hormones, it can be a matter of whatever it is exactly, but the point is that she doesn't have the normal body shape and various other certain bodily characteristics of women. So she's infertile, she's never going to be able to give birth. So therefore, the pasuk is implying with the word asher teled, that a woman, it has to be that at least her body is the type that's capable of giving birth. Now, it could be, she could be infertile for other reasons, she could be old, that doesn't matter. The point is, at least she has the relevant parts do work, in a certain sense, they work. But an ailonis is bederech hateva, it's not going to be able to work at all. She doesn't even have all the necessary parts, basically. So therefore, Asher Teled comes to exclude her, that Yibum and Chalitza are not applicable to her. When it says, Yokum Hashem Ochiv, when it says that he stands in place of his brother, that means Lenachla. That means as far as the inheritance, means that the Yavam inherits the property that used to belong to his brother. So you have brothers, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, etc. And Reuven died childless, and Shimon does Yibum with Reuven's wife. And then Shimon is going to take over whatever part of the Nachla had originally gone to Reuven. It doesn't, well, Boaz is something else, actually. Boaz is buying the property that used to belong to Elimelech and company and buying it so that it remains within the family. He's not getting it for free. No, what we're talking about is something else. What we mean, in other words, is that, so their father, Yaakov, had property. And when Yaakov passed away, then it was divided up. Reuven got a double portion, and Shimon got a single portion, and Levi got a single portion, etc. Now what happens when Reuven dies? If no Yibum is done, and he doesn't have any children, it's going to be divided equally among all his brothers. But if Yibum is done, we're saying all of his property goes to Shimon, who's the one who did the Yibum. So that we learn from the words Yokom Hashem Ochi, and Lenachla. Ata oimel lenachla. So you're saying that it means as far as nachla. Oyeina ela l'shem. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe it actually means as far as the name, as we would understand the surface meaning of the pasuk. Yosef koreinos Yosef. If the dead brother was named Yosef, then we should name the baby who's born after the Yibum. We should name him Yosef. Yaakov koreinos Yaakov. How do we know that it doesn't mean that? No. Nemar kan yokom al shem ochiv, because we have a gzeira shava. Here it says he will stand in the name of his dead brother. Yaakov, when he's giving a bracha to Ephraim and Manasseh, he says, you, Yosef, if you have any more sons after them, they will be called in their brother's name on the Nachla. Meaning, in other words, only Shevet Manasseh and Ephraim are going to get individual Shevet territories in Eretz Yisrael. If you have any other children after them, they're just going to be included into Shevet Manasseh or Shevet Ephraim, as the case may be, for purposes of Nachla. So there we're not talking about the names. We're not saying if you have another son, he's going to be named Manasseh. If you have another son, he's going to be named Ephraim. It means they're going to be included in the Nachla with Ephraim or with Manasseh. So therefore, so it's the same expression, al shem acheihem and al shem ochiv, ma shem ha'omel ha'alam nachla. So there it's talking about that they receive a portion of the nachla of Ephraim and Manasseh, respectively. The same way when it says Yochum, Hashem Achav Ames over here means that he stands in place of his brother as far as inheriting his portion of the Nachla. It has nothing. The Gemara is going to point out in another line. The name, it's absolutely not necessary. So that's what it means. And when the pasuk finishes off, when it says his name should not be wiped out, that means praplasoris. From those words in the pasuk, we learn that the concept of yibum does not apply if the man who died was a soris, which is also similar to an ilonis, who's a woman who has certain physical characteristics that her body has not developed properly. The same way a soris is the parallel thing with a man, where he has certain physical characteristics, his body remains like that of a boy in certain ways. So again, it can be a matter of genes or hormone or chromosomes or hormones or who knows what, whatever. Shashmoy mochui, in effect, his name is already erased because he's incapable of having children. So that's how we read the pasuk. In other words, when we read the pasuk with these drushes, then it's saying that the hoya b'chor, the mitzvah is that yibum should be done by the b'chor, asher teled, that the wife who's going to be taken and who's going to be married in yibum has to be capable of giving birth, not an ilonis. Yokum al shem ochev ames, the brother who does yibum will stand in the place of his brother as far as getting the nachla. V'lo yimocha shmoy miyisrael, and it has to be that the brother who died is not one whose name is already erased because he's a soris. So Omar Rava, and in fact Tosfos points out, really what it is what forces this whole explanation is the gzeira shava that we have on the words al shem ochim. Once we have that, then that if we didn't have that gzeira shava, then we would explain the whole pasuk according to its pshat. But once we have that gzeira shava, that forces us to reinterpret the whole pasuk in this way that we just did. So Omar Rava, points out in this connection, Afagav the Bechol Torah Kula in Mikra Yotzei Midei Pshutei, throughout the rest of the Torah, a posik never loses its simple meaning. We have many times where we darshin a posik and we learn a halacha from it. Nevertheless, as much as possible, we're mekayim the simple meaning of the posik as well. I mean, sometimes, of course, we don't mean, for example, let's say you have an expression where it says about tefillin b'nei necha, and we don't literally put it between our eyes. Fine, because that's the words b'nei necha are an expression that means the part of the forehead above between the eyes. So it's not, but in other words, you have various things where, let's say, for example, we darshan it from various things. We darshan that you can't do misas beistin on Shabbos. We darshan that havara lalav yotzas or lachalik yotzas, that it tells us certain details about the if a person is over on the lamed tes melachos. Nevertheless, it also has the simple meaning: don't light a fire. Don't light a fire in your houses on Shabbos. So we always have that. But here, Rava says, "Asoy gzeira shava." Here, as a result of the gzeira shava, a pikdim pshat legamri, it takes away the pshat completely, in the sense that therefore there's no requirement al pi halacha to name the firstborn baby after the yibum, after the dead brother. With that said, that's on the halacha level, and that's so. In fact, the Zohar tells a story where one time Rab Abba visits, the Zohar tells a story, Rab Levi Yitzchok analyzes it in one place in his writings, where Rab Abba visits a certain place, and a guy comes and tells him, "I did Yibum, and I named the baby after my dead brother," and Rab Abba says, "No, instead name him Idi." And Rab Levik discusses why he named him Idi, because it stands for Avraham Yitzchak David Yaakov. So like he's giving a bracha to be like the Dalad Ragvei Merkava. The point is that Rab Abba first has to tell him that no, don't name him Yaakov, because then you would be misinterpreting the pasuk as it's saying over here. With that said, though, an interesting thing that Al-Bag actually brings as a pasuk in Divrei Hayomim, we know the Gemara we're going to talk about soon in the Gemara about Er and Oinon, the sons of Yehuda who died for their Averis. And then you have Yehuda's one surviving son, Shelah, and then afterwards he had relations with Tamar and in Peretz and Zerach. So in Divrei Hayom, it mentions among the children of Shelah, it mentions his firstborn was named Er, and the Rabag says that was in token of the simple meaning of the pasuk. Hayos, that in the end, Shelah didn't do Yibum with Tamar. In the end, Yehuda did. But nevertheless, he took the initiative to name his firstborn after his dead brother, so his name is not completely erased. I guess you could say to for. I mean, here we're saying that it's not necessary to do that after Yibum, but after all, Shelah didn't do Yibum, so therefore he might as well. Okay. Further on, the Gemara talks about the point that it talks about if a Jewish man has relations with a goiter or with a shifcha, then the child is not considered Jewish. That leads into a little bit of discussion about certain dinim of geirus. There's more dinim of geirus in more detail later in the Masechta. So Reb Nechemya Omer, Echod Geiri Arayas, so Rav Nechemiah says, whether you have Geirim, people who became Geirim because of lions, because of fear of lions, the classic example being the Kusim, when Sancheiriv, after he took the Aseres HaShavatim into Golos, so he had resettled the place over there with Goyim from Kusa and various other places in and around Babel, and they're worshipping Avodah Zarah, and the Pasuk describes lions were coming and attacking them, and they were afraid, and they sent a message to Sancheiriv, apparently the god of this land doesn't like us worshipping our idols over here, what do we do? Now, the Goyim in those days had a notion that every land has its own god, so they figured Hashem is Lahavdil like that, and therefore, so when we're in his land, then he can't tolerate that. So the upshot of it is that they became quasi-Gerim, as we have throughout Shas, the famous Machlokas, whether they're valid Gerim or not, but they became Gerim out of fear of the lions. So Rav Nechemiah is saying whether they became Gerim because of the fear of the lions, the Echad Gerim Chaloimus, or a person became a Ger because he had a dream that he was told to become a Ger. The Echad Gerim Mordechai Esther, or the Gerim from the time of Mordechai and Esther, where you have in the Megillah, Rabbi Me'ama or it's Misyadim, that many people are pretending to be Jews, or maybe even actually becoming Jews. In all those cases, Rabbi Nechemiah says, Einam Gerim Abshis Gairu Bizmanazeh. They're not Gerim unless they become Gerim in our time, in Bizmanazeh, in our times. So Gemara says, what do you mean? What do you mean in our times? They're not living in our times. And Rashi points out, what about, for example, let's say you had many Gerim, many valid Gerim in previous generations. For example, the Gemara tells us Nebuzaradan became a Ger. So what does it mean? Ella emakibis manazeh. What it means is it has to be like it is nowadays, where the Jewish people are subjugated by the Goyim and all, and there's no reason to think that a Goy is becoming a Ger in order to join in Jewish wealth and power. So the Gemara ends up discussing this point, and Afa Pishu Kvar Helu Halacha Kedivra Emu Kulam Geirim Heim. So the Gemara ends up concluding the Halacha is not like Rav Nechemiah. The Halacha is actually that any kind of Geir, no matter what the motivation was, then B'dieved, as long as it was done by a proper Beis Din, then it's a valid Geirus. So Afila Hochi. So nevertheless, I said a little wrongly. The connection of this piece over here is that the Mishnah mentions, incidentally, in this connection where it says that if a Yid has relations with a Goyte and has a son, then that son is not considered a son as far as Yibum or anything. So the Mishnah also mentions that if there's rumors going around about a person that he's been involved with a Goyte or a Shifcha, then L'chatchila, he shouldn't marry her even after she's Nisgaya or even after she's freed. So that's the point over here. The Gemara says that Reb Nechemiah would say anyway, she wouldn't be a valid Ger if we think that she was Nisgaya for improper reasons. The halacha is in the end that I argued him. Afilohochi, nevertheless, hanitan minakusis minisgaira, if a person, there's rumors going around him that he was involved with a goita and then she became a ger, also the coin to lahatchila, then lahatchila, he's not allowed to marry her. So the shumder of Ashi or Asi, the reason is based on what Rav Ashi or Rav Asi says, the Omer of Ashi, or of Asi, as the Pasuk says, Hosir mimcho ikshus peh, take away from yourself crookedness of speech, meaning people are going to speak about you and say that you did something crooked. Keep that away. Don't allow such rumors to proliferate. Ulazus fasayim harchik mimcho, and keep far away from yourself wagging of tongues. So in other words, don't act in a way that's going to reinforce the original coil. People are already speaking and then spreading rumors about you that you did such and such wrong. Don't reinforce those rumors by then your taka going to go and marry this woman and people are going to say, oh, look, it was true all along. In fact, Marsha says the expression ikshus peh and the expression hanitan that he's rumored about means even if he himself knows that it's not true, but because of the chshad is a reason that he shouldn't marry her lachatchila. Because again, so even though it's ikshus, it's a crooked thing, it's not at all true, nevertheless, because there's that coil, don't act in a way that's going to end up reinforcing it. It's similar to what we learned in Yerushalmi Shkolim, that the Gemara had brought the point over there that a person has to act in a way that's not only correct in Hashem's eyes, but also correct in people's eyes. The Yisim Nikim, Hashem and Yisrael, and other psukim that the Gemara had brought to back up that point. So in this connection, the Gemara mentions Tana Rabbanan, Ein Mekablim Gerim Limos HaMashiach. We will not be allowed to accept Gerim in Mashiach's times, because then the likelihood is that why are they joining the Jewish people is because at that point we're going to be on top and we're going to be powerful and everything, and then the likelihood is that they're joining in order to enjoy that. Hayotzeboy, in a similar vein, Loi Kiblu Gerim Loi B'Mei David V'Loi B'Mei Shloimer. By the same token, They didn't accept Geirim in David's or in Shlomo's times because, again, there's a good reason to suspect that they're doing it because they want to join in the wealth and the superpower status that the Jewish people had at that time. Tosfos points out there are some exceptions that we find from that time. First of all, we find that there was Bas Paroi, who Shlomo married, and all of Shlomo's other wives as well. But Amram stresses the point that he was Megaya, all of them, because he's not going to be over on having relations with a Goita. You also have, Tosfos mentions, there was a character in David's times named Ittai Hagiti, where the Gemara explains that there are some soldiers in David's army that are mentioned in Malachim and in Divrei Hayamim that bear names that mean that they came from foreign countries, for example, Uriah Hachiti, but the Gemara says doesn't mean that they're Goyim from that country. It means they're Jews who lived in that country. But Ittai Hagiti, the Gemara explains, was actually a Goy from Gas who became a Ger. So how does that not violate this rule? Tosfos says, listen, they were already rich and powerful in their countries. They're not becoming Geirim in order to join in the riches and power of the Jewish people because they already have that in the Goyish lands they came from. What about Tosfos says further on in the Masechta? We'll get to it in a next week sometime, Be'ez Hashem, or the week after that. I don't know. You have a whole story over there involving the Givonim and the fact that they were angry at what Shaul had done to them years earlier. And the upshot of the story is it says that 150,000 and some Goyim became Jews. So how does that not violate this? Tosfos says Me'atzmam Nisgayru. They became Geirim on their own. Meaning, not literally on their own. A person can't become a ger on his own. But in other words, like they found like bati dinim of hadyotis who don't realize this point and were megayer them. So in other words, a reputable beisdin shouldn't do that. But b'dieved, it's done. Then it's done. And then Tosfos mentions also, what about you have the cases involving Hillel where a goy comes to him and says, make me a ger on condition I'll become a Kohen Gadol, among the other stories over there. So the vote is Tosfos says Hillel knew that eventually he's going to come l'shem shemayim. So Mephoshim point out anyway that in Hillel's times the Jewish people are not exactly on top anyhow, so you have less of an issue of that. But even this particular guy is saying I'm a Anastas She'ei a Kohen Gadol and figures that he's going to be able to wear the rich, beautiful clothing of the Kohen Gadol. Fine, but Hillel knows that deep down he has a better motivation and he just doesn't know better right now. So Amar Rabbi Elazar, Maikra, where's a pasuk that expresses this point that we're not going to accept Geirim Limos HaMashiach? The pasuk says, "Hein gur yogur efes me oisi." Who is it? Behold, those who live will be nothing if it's not for me. The simple meaning of the pasuk is something like "gur" means to be fearful, like a guru mipneish. So the simple meaning of the pasuk is something like "Hein gur yogur efes me oisi." You should know nobody has any reason to be afraid unless it's coming from me. And the pasuk continues, "Mi gur ito chalayich yipo." Whoever is living with you is going to fall or is going to surrender to you. So that's the simple meaning of the pasuk. But the Gemara is darshaning the last half of the pasuk. Mi gor itach, alayich yipol, means mi gor itach, whoever lived with you as a ger, ba'ami yusich, during the time when you Jewish people were poor and subjugated, uda alayich yipol. Now he will be able to yipol together with you. Yipo means not to fall. It means to rest, to encamp, like we find by Yishmael, apnei kolach of nafal. So the word nafal, the shodesh nafal, can mean to rest, to encamp. So mi gor itach, those who live with you during the time of galus, alayich yipo, they will be able to rest with you, laosid lavay. Aval idach loy, but not anybody else, not people who first are coming as geirim, laosid lavay. Actually, there's an interesting thing where there's a Mefurdish, a Rishon named Rabbi Eliezer Mibelgansi. He was a Talmud of the Rashbam, and he wrote a Pirush on a number of Sforim of Tanakh. He says the first half of the Pasuk fits with this also. Hashem is saying, Hein Gur Yogur. You have people who think that they can live in Eretz Yisrael and be Geirim and be the masters of it. You should know, Efes Me Oisi. It's nothing if I don't approve of it. Because only Mi Gur Itach Alayich Yipo. So in other words, even in the context of the pasuk, it's not just a drosha. In other words, the pasuk is saying, you Jewish people are worried. You have people who think they can take over Eretz Yisrael and live in it and then do whatever they want. You should know, nobody has the ability to live in Eretz Yisrael and to be a master of it unless Efes Me Oisi, unless it's with my permission. And you'll see, La'asid Lavan Migor Itach Alayich Yipo. All right. Mis Yadim literally means like they made themselves Jews. So it can mean they pretended to be Jews, but the Gemara seems to be taking it, at least Reb Nechemiah is taking it in the sense that they actually became, or at least tried to become Jews, and Reb Nechemiah is saying it didn't work because they're only doing it because of their fear of what's going on over there with Mordechai. So that's the thing. Reb Nechemiah would say that they're trying to become Geirim, but Reb Nechemiah would say since their motivations were no good, then they're not actually Jews. It's only Mis Yadim. The Chachamim would disagree and say it's true they shouldn't be becoming Geirim because of such reasons, but b'dieved they did, then they're considered valid Geirim. Maisim b'chol, I wouldn't say Maisim b'chol yon, but you have people who become Geirim, not necessarily for the best of motives. Generally, batidinim, reputable batidinim, usually try to ferret out this thing, but you know they don't always, and sometimes it happens. They're megayer somebody. Now you have reform and conservative giurim. We're not even talking about that because they're such batidinim, a bechlal posel to administer a geirus. We'll talk about that. We're going to have soon in the next couple of tomorrow. Best Hashem, we'll have a sugya about the dinim of geirus. But when it's a based in where they accept Torah Misinai and they accept Torah Shabbat Peh and everything, but they don't take enough care like these both to dinim had yotas that Tosfos is referring to, that were Magaya people without the proper motivations, then fine, b'dieved it works. Yom Yom Mashiach Ugola. Mashiach's neshama incorporates within it all the neshamas of the Jewish people. He's a neshama kelelas of all the Jewish people. That is why he has the ability to take all Jewish people out of Golus. As in fact, the Ramaz says on the Zohar that Mashiach is b'chinat yechida. He is the all-encompassing yechida of the Jewish people. Now, we know there's nefesh, ruach, neshama, chaya, yechida. David HaMelech was zoicha to be the nefesh of the Jewish people. Eliyahu was the ruach. Moshe Rabbeinu was the neshama. Adam HaRishon was the chaya. And Mashiach will have that aspect of yechida. And that means vice versa. Also, every yid has a spark of Mashiach in him because every yid has a yechida, and that yechida is part of that yechida klolus, which is Mashiach. What? Yeah, there's a higher level than Yechida. Etzema Nefesh. Okay. Continuing with halachas of bathing and washing on Shabbos. So he mentions you're allowed to put bran on you. You're allowed to rub bran on your hands. I guess they used to do that back in the day to clean their hands, even if your hands are wet. But you can't actually pour water on it because that would be a tolda of losh. Now you can't though rub your hands with salt or with soap, because when you wash it with water, then you're doing nimoyach. It dissolves, and therefore you have an issue of the malacha of memareach. Liquid soap, by the way, is not quite so simple either. You have thinner liquid soaps, which are not, there's no memareach. You can't really spread them because they're fairly liquid. But the more semi solid type of list, some of the thicker liquid soaps are taka not so glat in halacha to use on Shabbos.
Hand sanitizer is okay.
Hand sanitizer, I don't know necessarily. It's also a very thick liquid which you actually spread. The truth is there are different kinds of hand sanitizers. I don't know that you can generalize. You have some that are more liquidy and some that are a lot more like a semi-solid, almost like a waxy consistency. So there is that distinction between the different kinds.